speak to.
The appellant.
The counsel will state their appearance for the record.
The appellant appears by Kenneth Carpenter, Your Honor.
Tamika Springs, Your Honor. Co-counsel, Deputy Assistant General Counsel, Joe Murray.
Mr. Carpenter, you have 30 minutes to argue. Do you wish to reserve any of that time?
Yes, Your Honor. If the court please, I'd like to reserve 10 minutes.
Very well. You may proceed.
May it please the court, Kenneth Carpenter appearing on behalf of Dennis Cogburn. Mr. Cogburn's case is not about the question of an earlier effective date for his current disability award for compensation for his disability from post-traumatic stress disorder. To the contrary, Mr. Cogburn's case is about his right to the adjudication of his original 1974 claim for compensation for a nervous condition. The VA has expressly recognized by regulation at 38 CFR 3.160(c) that a veteran's claim remains pending until it is finally adjudicated. That has been the circumstance in this case. Mr. Cogburn's original claim in 1974 was never decided. He filed an original claim on a VA form for compensation and pension. The VA adjudicated the question of pension. They did not adjudicate the question of compensation.
Mr. Carpenter, what was decided in 1984?
What was decided in 1984 was a claim for service connection for post-traumatic stress disorder.
Is that for compensation?
That was for compensation, Your Honor. However, that claim for compensation was for an entirely different described disability, and no reference was made either in the original decision by the VA or in the board's decision in 1985, which made any reference to the existence of a 1974 claim. Well, that's what Mr. Cogburn described as his disability. However, there are specific regulatory requirements for entitlement to compensation for post-traumatic stress disorder that do not apply to the general requirement for disability for any other disability, and specifically for any other psychiatric disability.
Doesn't the board decision in 1985 also refer or state that they did not find any incidents of psychiatric disability during service and describe various diagnoses for psychiatric disabilities made subsequent to service?
That's correct, Your Honor. But what they do not do is they do not address Mr. Cogburn's entitlement to compensation based upon a continuity of symptomatology. What is clear from the evidence of record is that Mr. Cogburn's disability began soon after his discharge and was continuously problematic for him from his time of discharge. Under VA regulations, the board should have taken that up had they, in fact, been adjudicating his original 1974 claim. However, the issue in this case is not a question of implicit denial in the board's 1985 decision of the 1974 claim. What's at issue in this case is whether or not Mr. Cogburn was or was not denied his right to due process. He was denied his right to due process in this case because the VA never made a decision on his 1974 claim, and more importantly, did not.
Not making a decision is not necessarily denial of due process.
Well, but it is, Your Honor, because until there is a.
In your brief, you take the position, as I agree, that the implicit denial doctrine has applied here to Mr. Cogburn is unconstitutional.
That's correct.
And why did you say that?
Because Mr. Cogburn never received the opportunity to appeal any decision.
He never received notice. That's your argument,
That's correct.
He can't and appeal unless he received notice.
That's right. And
so the element of the constitutionality, as I understand your claim is based on, is not that, let me make sure this is clear, you're not saying that the implicit denial doctrine is in itself unconstitutional. No. You're saying that as applied to Mr. Cogburn in this case, it's unconstitutional because he did not get notice.
That's correct, Your Honor. Because without that notice, he could not have initiated an appeal. And the Due Process Clause of the Fifth Amendment requires a meaningful opportunity for an appeal. Well, you can't get a meaningful opportunity for appeal if you never received notice. And what distinguishes this case from the other line of cases in which this court has applied the implicit denial rule is that in those cases, it was a direct appeal from the, excuse me, Your Honor, assignment of the effective date. And this case is not a direct appeal, nor is it an independent claim for an earlier effective date.
Let's almost stop right there. There is no such thing as a direct claim for an earlier effective date.
No, under this court's decision in Rudd, there is not a basis for a claim. What the distinction I was trying to draw was is that in other cases, this court has dealt with the question of, is there an independent right to a claim for effective date? And this court has...
Let me just stop there. Mm-hmm. In order to get an earlier effective date, and one somebody can get it in two ways. One is on direct appeal, when the RO, for example, or the board, has said that your effective date is X, and you believe it's X minus something. The only other way to get an earlier effective date is by saying that the prior decision was decided on the basis of clear and unmistakable error. So to say there's no independent claim for an effective date, while it may be true in sort of jargon, to think about it and to think about it in terms of precisely what the law says, that is what we mean by that.
And
here we're dealing with a direct appeal, or at least we don't have an adjudication yet. That's what you're saying.
That's right. We are not dealing with a direct appeal, nor are we dealing with a claim of clear and unmistakable error. We are dealing with a due process violation in which the VA was presented with a claim in 1974, and that claim was decided in part, but not in pertinent part, as it relates to the question of compensation. And as a consequence, Mr. Cogburn's facts are entirely distinguishable from any other case in which this court has taken the matter up in terms of how to deal with this. And that's why I started this argument by observing that this is not a question of entitlement to an earlier effective date. What Mr. I'm sorry, from DeShotel? Yeah, or Des Hotel. Federal Circuit's decision in Des Hotel is distinguishable because that case dealt with the right to use an earlier adjudication in order to establish an earlier effective date. And the court held that if there was an intervening decision that decided the substance of the matter, that under what was developed in Des Hotel, the implicit denial rule, under that rule of law, that would preclude the establishment of an earlier effective date through that means. This case, however, asks the question as to whether or not when Mr. Cogburn was denied his right to due process, denied the opportunity for an appeal, is he entitled to the benefit of that constitutional right, or is it trumped by the implicit denial rule?
Hotel individual files two claims that are closely related. He says, hey, somebody hit my head. And they adjudicated, the VA adjudicated the fact that he had trauma. But they did not specifically adjudicate the issue of the psychological disability. And the Federal Circuit said, as I recall, that when the VA adjudicated the head trauma disability, it impliedly also adjudicated the disability for psychological problems, and therefore the individual had notice because the claim was denied, and therefore could not seek an earlier effective date. Our notice was not deficient.
That's correct.
Now, in this case, if I understand the facts, the individual here, Mr. Cogburn, says, hey, I have a psychological disability. I have a nervous disorder. And we all know that, you know, that the Chicago or any other layperson is capable of diagnosing specifically what they have.
I'm sorry, he's not capable.
Not capable.
Oh, okay.
Right?
I thought you said capable.
So the VA has to do something with this nervous disorder. So they get together a bunch of psychiatrists, and they initially say, hey, you've got schizophrenia, and you've got depressive disorder, and so forth, correct?
Actually, I don't believe they did that in the first decision. The schizophrenia came up afterwards. The initial decision dealt with depression and anxiety, and I believe depressive neurosis was the discharge diagnosis.
So the VA experts defined it, right?
Correct.
They
gave it the label.
Now, as far as Mr. Cogburn is concerned, hey, the nervous disorder is a nervous disorder is a nervous disorder. So why wouldn't he get an adjudication for... depression or whatever it was, the first adjudication, why doesn't that tell him, hey, my claim's been denied?
Well, I think under the implicit denial rule, it would. Under the Constitution, I do not believe that it did, because he was entitled to notice of what they decided.
I believe the standard for Amherst and Adams and some of these other cases is that would a reasonable person think that the claim they filed had been denied?
Correct.
So if responding to Judge Kinkle's question, saying I filed this claim for nervous disorder, VA came back and said, no, you don't have a disease that they filled in the blank for, you said under implicit denial it would be denied. So why wouldn't he, as a reasonable person, think the only claim I filed was for a nervous disorder, VA called it
depression.
Yeah. Why isn't it denied what I was seeking benefits for? Why wouldn't a reasonable person think that?
Well, in this case,
I never filed a claim for depressive neurosis.
Well, I understand that. And one of the problems in this case that I observed as I came into the case in reading the record of proceedings is what absent from this record is the notice of what happened in 1974. In the record is the decision, and the decision explicitly says that this is a claim for pension. It makes no reference whatsoever to a claim for compensation.
In 1985, he filed the same exact claim. VA this time calls it PTSD, and they deny it. So, again, why would a reasonable person not think the claim I filed, VA is calling PTSD, and they're denying it?
We are not arguing whether or not this case does or does not come under the penumbra of the implicit denial rule. We are arguing that to apply the implicit denial rule abridges Mr. Cogburn's rights to due process in the 1974 decision.
It would only abridge his right to due process if he didn't receive notice that a reasonable person would construe as denying his case.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. That's the standard under implicit denial. That is not the constitutional standard. The constitutional standard is that he had a reasonable opportunity to appeal. He had no opportunity.
That the PTSD claim was denied.
That's the PTSD claim, Your Honor. That's not the 1974 claim. The 1974 claim is the denial of due process.
But he had anticipated in 1974 that he was going to be receiving a decision on compensation, not pension. And he didn't receive a decision on compensation. Would it not be reasonable for him to inquire of VA as to why he didn't ask a decision on pension?
And that certainly would be reasonable, Your Honor, but I do not believe that it's relevant to his constitutional guarantee to due process.
He got notice of the decision.
I see no such notice in the record, Your Honor.
Oh, okay, so that's another issue, then. He didn't receive notice. He didn't receive a decision. He didn't receive advice to do that.
I have no idea because it's not in the record, Your Honor. All I'm telling you is what's in the record is the decision. In the record is not the notice.
Okay. You are requiring more than a reasonable person would have thought the claim they filed had been denied to pass constitutional muster, then wouldn't the implicit denial rule which only requires that, never be constitutional under your construct?
Your Honor, that's a separate argument for a separate for another case, not for this case. In this case, there is absolutely no dispute that the VA ever issued a decision on compensation. If you don't issue a decision, then as a matter of fact and law, there can be no notice of the VA's decision to give you the opportunity to appeal.
But you do agree that there was a decision on compensation in 1984?
Absolutely. But that's not relevant to the constitutional deprivation here.
Do you agree, too, though, that if there were no decision made in 1974, that under 3.160, that was still depending on
Oh, absolutely. I'm not sure I understand what you're saying. You're saying that the 1974 claim remains pending because there was no decision. That would be correct, Your Honor.
And didn't 1984 get a decision?
No, it did not, Your Honor. Because the only way that it could have gotten a constitutional decision, it did get a decision, but it did not give a get a constitutional decision because that was an event that happened in 1974, not a decade later.
And so that swallows our opinion on the group then. In other words, you're saying there's some constitutional decision you're supposed to be in 74?
No, what it swallows is the implicit denials rules application in a circumstance in which the veteran was deprived of the notice to which he was entitled of his right to appeal a decision that was not made.
This was the decision was not made. There was no implicit denial. It's still pending.
That's correct.
That's your position.
That's correct.
And
no, Your Honor, I believe that that was a different claim and a claim for PTSD and a claim that was only adjudicated for PTSD under the special requirements for post-traumatic stress disorder.
They deny service-connected compensation in
1984. For post-traumatic stress disorder.
Is that a nervous disorder?
That is a nervous disorder. But that was not the nervous disorder that he was diagnosed with or suffered from in 1974.
Compensation. Did he say,
I'm
going to want service connection for a nervous disorder, not PTSD?
And not schizophrenia.
And not schizophrenia. No, and not schizophrenia for sure. I have to look up the PTSD.
If you want, you can address it in your rebuttal.
I think I have
it. About 3 minutes left.
I'd actually like to pursue the question of how do you define, because you're arguing that he submitted a claim apart from a PTSD claim. How are we to discern what his claim is for?
I don't believe that you have to go through that process under a constitutional analysis. You have to go through that process under the implicit denial rule. And this case seeks to distinguish when you apply the implicit denial rule and when you do not apply the implicit denial rule.
To discern a claim to determine that he did not receive constitutional due process notice of denial of that claim, if there is no claim filed, there is no failure.
What you're suggesting is that the constitutional error can be remedied by an implicit denial.
No, I'm asking how does VA determine, or how does this court determine, what claims were pending in 1984 or 85 for us to decide whether he got a denial of any of them, and then if they were denied, if he received notice of those denials. I see it as there's three steps involved. What claims are there? What was denied? And what was their notice? And so if there's only one claim pending in 1983, and we decide that that claim was PTSD, then we're done. If we decide that there's two claims pending in 1983, then we proceed with the next discussion.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure that it's fair to Mr. Cogburn to make that retrospective assessment of the claims because the claims were based upon the disability that was documented in his VA record. There is no question in the 1974 decision made by the VA that they acknowledge that he was 50% disabled for pension purposes.
For
Well, actually, I believe there's three pieces to that. First is his claim. Second is the VA medical records. And third is the VA's decision. In this case, he referred to it generically as a nervous condition. The second documentation in the VA medical records described it as a depressive neurosis, and the VA decision found that he suffered from a disability from a psychiatric condition that was rateable at 50% disabling, but because he was not totally and permanently unemployable, he did not qualify for pension. Therefore, the only claim that was in play at that point was the claim for pension that had been decided, and the claim for compensation, which was never decided. And this record is absent any notice documentation for this court to be able to discern what Mr. Cogburn was or was not told about his right to appeal any decision. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't have my time. I didn't realize that.
I'd like to address what was filed in 1983.
Three. Okay.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Tamika Springs, and I represent the Secretary of the Department of Veterans.
Wait 1 second, hold on.
Good morning. May I please the court? My name is Tamika Springs, and I represent the Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs. To my right is Co-Counsel, Deputy Assistant General Counsel, John Mariarty. It is the Secretary's position that any issuance to a pending November 1974 claim was extinguished by the February 1975 RO's decision. It is the Secretary's position, Your Honor, that the appellant, the denial of non-service-connected pension was a final decision, Your Honor. The appellant received notice with regards to this decision. Appellant filed no notice of disagreement with this decision, so this decision became final. If appellant felt he had a compensation claim with regards to the November 1974 claim, his remedy was to file a notice of disagreement with the board at that time.
So, I'm sorry, just to clarify, the agency's position is that the 1974 claim was decided in total in 1975?
The Secretary's position is that the February 1975 decision was a claim for pension, Your Honor. At that time, when appellant, as well as his representative, Your Honor, failed to receive the appellant's notice of disagreement, if he felt, Your Honor, that he had a claim for compensation, Your Honor, that he was to file a notice of disagreement at that time.
If I may direct your attention to the 2002 Regional Office decision in the record at 476, I believe it said that full denial of that his claim for service connection for PTSD was reopened in 1983. So what claim did he have to reopen? Was it the pension claim? Is that what the original office would have been referring to?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe in that decision, Your Honor, that the regional office said if there was a pending claim, Your Honor, then it was implicitly denied by the November 1985 board decision, Your Honor. So that was in the alternative, Your Honor, if there was a compensation claim, Your Honor.
We'll move on.
I have a couple questions about this pension versus compensation claim. you're saying that when the pension claim was denied, then that automatically denied the compensation right, correct?
That's the Secretary's decision, Your Honor.
Okay. Now, what is the requirement for pension?
Your Honor, let me go back, Your Honor. When we said that it was denied, we're saying that that decision was final. And if that appellant, Your Honor, felt that he had a claim.
If it's final, what happened to the compensation?
The Secretary's decision, Your Honor, is that that decision was final. If the appellant felt that he had a claim for compensation.
Final on what? If a claim is not completely adjudicated, you can't file a notice of disagreement. So to say that if a claim is not adjudicated, then why would somebody disagree with a claim that hasn't been finally adjudicated? So it seems to me if you're saying that the decision was final, then you must be saying that the pension claim and the compensation claim were decided at the same time.
No, Your Honor. What the Secretary's position is that the pension claim, Your Honor, put the appellant on notice of what claims was decided by VA, Your Honor, as well as his representative, Your Honor. If, at that time, Your Honor, the appellant felt that he had a claim for compensation, which the regional office did not address. At that time, he should have responded by filing a notice of disagreement to the agency, Your Honor.
Well, Your Honor,
the requirements for pension, Your Honor, it's about the requirements for pension, Your Honor. It goes to the amount of.
But what are the requirements? In order to qualify for pension, what requirements does an individual have to meet?
Your Honor, may I confer with counsel for a second? Your Honor, the pension claim refers to the appellant's income, Your Honor, versus the pension claim, Your Honor, refers to its income base versus compensation, Your Honor, refers to if the veteran was injured while in service or within 1 year after discharge, Your Honor. That's the difference, Your Honor. One is income based.
Okay, so a pension claim, the individual has a disability, but it's not service related.
Yes, Your Honor.
And because of the disability, the individual must be not employable. Correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So if they're not employable, and I think they have to also serve in a time of war.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so they have to serve in a time of war. They have to have a disability that is not related to their service. And they have to be unemployable because of that disability.
Yes, Your Honor.
And in this case, and now for compensation, what do you have to show? And let me ask you this, what chapter, where in the statute does the right to pension come from?
Your Honor, as far as the compensation claim, you have to show that.
Where in the code, in Title 38, what is the provision, or what chapter does the right to a pension arise from?
Your Honor, may I confer with co-counsel, please? Your Honor, we're not sure at this point, Your Honor.
Let's just say that they come from different parts of the Title 38. Would that make a difference as to whether or not they come of the same family?
Well, no, Your Honor.
Okay, what are the elements for, let's go back now, we've got pension operator. What are the elements for compensation?
For compensation, Your Honor, the appellant has to show that he or she was injured in service, Your Honor.
Well, after so there's an event in service.
An event in service.
They have a current disability.
Yes.
And that disability is somehow related to their service.
Yes, Your Honor.
To an event that occurred in service or within the presumptive
compensation is awarded, Your Honor, if the regional office decides that the, if based on medical evidence, if it's shown that the event is service-related, Your Honor, then compensation is awarded, Your Honor.
It's awarded, though, in increments depending on the rating scale, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so in the compensation situation, we have this current disability, it's related to service, and it's awarded based upon its impact on an individual's employability or ability to earn income. So somebody doesn't have to be totally unemployable in order to get compensation, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Do you see these as two different schemes, or does this, you know, appear to be just one?
Yes, Your Honor, two different schemes, Your Honor.
Okay, if they're two different schemes, then why is it that somebody would have notice if one of these benefits was adjudicated, but the other one wasn't? Why would they have notice that both of them were adjudicated at the same time?
Your Honor, it's the Secretary's position that although it was only a pension claim decided in February 1975, that if the appellant felt there was a claim for pension that should have been decided, Your Honor, that he should have filed a notice of disagreement, Your Honor, with that decision. So not necessarily that it was decided by the pension claim, Your Honor, but it put him on notice what the regional office decided, Your Honor. In the alternative, Your Honor, if this court finds that there is a pending claim for the November 1974 decision, it was implicitly denied by the November 1985 board decision, Your Honor. Your Honor, it's looking at the entire board decision, Your Honor. The whole. Yes. Well, Your Honor, the November 1985 board decision, starting with the first page, Your Honor, couched the issue as a time of the service connection for a psychiatric condition claimed as PTSD, Your Honor.
Also, he didn't claim it as PTSD, right? He claimed it as a nervous condition.
Yes, Your Honor, but the current diagnosis at that time, Your Honor, was PTSD. Yes, Your Honor.
Let's see. That's how they believe that the individual has symptoms, Mr. Carver had symptoms, apparently represented the disability of PTSD, right? And so that's what they investigated. But they didn't.
Well, Your Honor, yes. The examination was conducted in 1983. Your Honor, and it diagnosed the appellant with PTSD, Your Honor. However, in August 1984, Your Honor, the adjudication officer found that the 1983 examination was inadequate for lack of identifiable stressor, Your Honor. So at that time, Your Honor, the examination was sent back and another examination was required to be conducted, Your Honor. However, the appellant failed to appear to that examination, Your Honor. And then in April 1985, Your Honor, there was another board decision in which the board noted all the different diagnoses in the record, Your Honor, including schizophrenia and the 1983 diagnosis of PTSD. At that time, Your Honor, the board sent it back again, Your Honor, for an examination to resolve the conflicting diagnoses of the record, Your Honor. However, appellant failed to appear again, Your Honor.
Does that have any significance into helping us decide what claim was pending, what disability was being considered, or should that have any impact on the court's decision in determining whether his claim was fully adjudicated in 1985?
Yes, Your Honor, in the Secretary's position that the appellant's failure to appear should have some effect of the decision, Your Honor. Just because the appellant is arguing that he had no notice of his schizophrenia disorder not being adjudicated, Your Honor. The attempt, Your Honor, by the regional office on two different occasions to get the appellant into the office, Your Honor, to examine exactly, to find out exactly what the appellant had, Your Honor, shows the appellant that the board was working along with the appellant to try to figure out exactly what they had, Your Honor. The board in November 1985 decision noted that the appellant manifested symptoms of schizophrenia, Your Honor. However, because the appellant failed to show for those two examinations, they could not resolve the conflicted diagnosis, Your Honor, as to exactly what the appellant had, Your Honor.
I don't really care about whether the person came to the exam or didn't come to the exam or any of that stuff, right? I'm here. Aren't we only concerned with when the claim was adjudicated, at what point, and whether or not the individual got notice of the adjudication at that point? Why it happened, does that make any difference to us? I mean, I understand the guy didn't show up.
Right, Your Honor.
Does that make any difference to the issue here, this whole one? And it's always coming out.
Well, Your Honor, I think that goes to show the appellant, Your Honor. It put him on notice, Your Honor, that the board was trying to figure out exactly what he had, Your Honor. Appellant claims that the board failed to encompass a claim for schizophrenia, Your Honor. The fact that the regional office, Your Honor, was sending the examination back to figure out exactly what appellant had, Your Honor, was notifying appellant in a sense that they did not know exactly what appellant had. Was it schizophrenia or was it PTSD? Since appellant, Your Honor, claims that he received no notice that his claim was adjudicated, Your Honor, the Secretary's decision is yes.
So you're saying
yes, Your Honor.
Now, but at the end of all this, there had to be a decision. And as Mr. Cogburn had been told that this decision has been made, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, and the Secretary, putting aside the RO issue, the Secretary's position is that in 1985, clearly, this issue of psychological or psychiatric disability was put to bed and Mr. Harper received notice. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Where in the 85 decision, what language do you say provided that notice?
Your Honor, again, the Secretary points to the issue on the board decision and in the context of the board decision, Your Honor. No, the board did not explicitly deny that claim. It's the Secretary's decision that was an implicit denial of that schizophrenia diagnosis, Your Honor, of all the severe nervous conditions, Your Honor.
If the board or VA was, following up on my earlier questions, sort of struggling to determine what disability Mr. Cogburn actually had, would it not have been the better course for it to say, if you file a PTSD claim, this is what the outcome is? If you file a schizophrenia or depressive neurosis claim, because we know he has diagnoses of schizophrenia, this is service connected or not service connected. Would that not have been the appropriate course for the agency to take?
And with regards to the November 1985 board decision, Your Honor?
1985.
Well, Your Honor, this is the Secretary's decision that the board did take that position. The way that the issue was titled and the context of the board decision, which considered all the medical evidence since the November 1974 filing of the appellant's claim, that the board did do that, Your Honor.
Well, what the board ends up saying at the very end is, we don't think you have PTSD because you don't have a stressor, and the exam is sort of shaky, but you won't show up for another one. But we also know the preponderance of the medical evidence suggests that the veteran's post-service emotional and adjustment difficulties are manifestations of schizophrenia. So they say you have schizophrenia, but where do they explicitly say, and your service and your schizophrenia is not service connected?
Well, where do they say your nervous condition is not service connected? Which is what the claim was for, your nervous condition, because you can't say schizophrenia, this depression, or whatever. And he can't, doesn't have the capability to do that. But he can make a claim for nervous disorder. Now, it's up to the VA, because they're going to provide treatment to the individual, they have to determine how much compensation the individual gets for various reasons. The VA doctors have to narrow this to the diagnosis. So I don't have a problem with them saying, hey, this, you don't have PTSD, or you don't have schizophrenia, or even if you have it, it's not related to the service. But he didn't say, hey, I got PTSD, or I have schizophrenia, I'm depressed. What he said was, I have a nervous condition. And you know, this is not, you know, a lawyer, or a doctor, or a college professor, I didn't know the scientific education he had. This is a veteran who's, that's what he was disabled, obviously, he couldn't go if he didn't have that, approval of pension. And, and so why is it that this technical language is sufficient to give him notice when he filed a general claim?
Well, just as Your Honor stated, because the substance of the claim in November 1974, Your Honor, as well as the substance of the claim in the 1983 application, Your Honor, are the same. In each instance, Your Honor, the appellant stated that he was filing a claim for a severe nervous condition. In 74, he stated a severe nervous condition. In June 1983, Your Honor, he stated a nervous disorder, Your Honor. So it was the Secretary's position that the substance of the claim, Your Honor, was similar, Your Honor. So, although the November 1985 board decision denied entitlement to service connection for PTSD, a psychiatric condition claimed as PTSD, that at that time was what the appellant's last diagnosis was, Your Honor. But the appellant, but the board decision was trying to render a decision with regards to this nervous disorder. And at that time, that's what appellant had, Your Honor.
So, subsequent to the 1984 decision, he was granted service connection for PTSD. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
So, and in 1984, he was denied service connection for PTSD?
In 1984, yes. Right. He was not.
And that there might have been a schizophrenia question, something else that might be out there, I suppose. Or is that sick? Is that just a no condition in which the board or VA has finally decided a decision or made a decision?
Well, Your Honor, at this time, the appellant has no current diagnosis of schizophrenia.
Okay. So when you finally got service connection, it was for the PTSD?
Yes, Your Honor.
In 84, you got a denial for PTSD?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's what we're talking about, taking it from the 1974 nervous disorder.
Yes, sir.
Isn't there a case law that says that if you suffer from a condition at the time you filed your claim, even if you no longer suffer from that condition, that you could still be service connected and receive a stage rating that might potentially result in a 0% at the current time?
Your Honor, the Secretary is not familiar with any such case law. However, we will research that and provide a supplemental.
Well, I was just trying to assert that whether he currently has schizophrenia or not may or may not be relevant to deciding the pending claim, I'm curious a little bit as to a question that I asked Mr. Hubbard at the end of this time is, how should the court discern what is a claim? Should we be looking to the diagnoses? Should we be looking at the symptoms? What should we be looking at to decide whether something is the same claim or not, or to decide if it was decided?
Your Honor, we should be looking at the substance of the claim.
And how, in more meaty terms, what is the substance of the claim?
Oh, Your Honor, the substance of the claim is with regards to the symptoms. Your Honor, not necessarily was diagnosed, Your Honor. This court in Boggs held, Your Honor, that distinctly different diagnoses are different claims. In this instance, we do not have two distinctly different diagnoses, Your Honor. In this instance, the appellant filed claim 74 for a nervous disorder, Your Honor, and 83 for a nervous disorder, Your Honor. So the substance of the claim, Your Honor, Secretary asserts, is the same claim. If there are no further questions.
Thank you. Just show them to begin. At page 912 of the record of proceedings is the 1983 application, and what is described there under Nature and History of Disabilities section, specifically nature of sickness, disease, or injury which the claim is made and the date each began, says service connection, parens, began soon after discharge, began treatment in 1972. In the original application, which is in the record at 535, the same subsection, but it doesn't have the same header, but under paragraph number 25, it says nature of sickness, disease, injuries which the claim is made and the date on which each began. It says severe nervous condition. No, what renders the claim pending is that there was no decision. It was not finally adjudicated. There was no
theory that wasn't adjudicated.
No, it was the original claim for service connection for a nervous condition. And I think, as has been correctly pointed out during the questioning of the government by the court, is that the 1985 board decision simply did not address the claim made by Mr. Cogburn in his application in 1983. What they addressed was what they found to be the way in which the acquired psychiatric disorder was claimed.
Well, I'll ask you what I asked the appellee's counsel, which is, VA was trying to figure out what this guy had. And they had some exams that said this and some exams that said that. And he wouldn't show up to reconcile. Under Clemens, VA was doing what he was supposed to be doing. So what? Why is a decision as to PTSD not a decision as to his entire kit and caboodle psychiatric condition?
Because in this case, there were specific diagnoses of a potential current disability from schizophrenia, and even a conclusion by the board that his current disability was in fact from schizophrenia. That put the board on notice that they should have also adjudicated the question of nervous connection based upon schizophrenia. And they didn't do that in 1985 any more than they did it in response to the 1974 claim.
We're here because he says, I don't agree with the effective date on my PTSD.
No, Your Honor, we are not.
We're not.
We are here because he asked in October of 2002 what happened to my unadjudicated claim, and the VA responded, your unadjudicated claim was decided by the board in 1985.
The RO said that.
The RO said that.
Addressed
that question, even though the statement of the case specifically identified that as the issue.
So can we actually make any of the determinations that you're asking us to make, or do we have to send it back to the board for reasons and basis?
Well, I believe that you can and should address the due process question, because the due process question arises in this case based upon an application that was made, and the record is undisputed, there was no decision.
Don't we have to make a finding of fact, though, that there is a pending claim? The board doesn't really say that.
I don't believe you have to make a finding of fact. I think you can make a conclusion of law that when a veteran makes an application, as he did here, on a VA form for pension and compensation, that it is an application for both. And until such time as he receives a written decision on that application, there has been no due process afforded because he cannot initiate an appeal of a decision that was never made.
Now, being the counsel of Norris and a lot of other cases that have gone down this path, we're switching a little bit. In other words, we're saying if you don't make a decision, it's pending.
No, Your Honor, I think the facts in this case are different for that very reason. That was not the facts in Norris. The facts in Norris were that they, in fact, made a decision but didn't share it with Mr. Norris. When they gave him the notice, they said, we decided claims 1 through 4, but we didn't tell you about claims 5 through 8. That was the defect. That was a defect in notice. This case involves a decision that was never made, the dog that didn't bark. What happened? Now, I believe the due process extends to his right to have received a decision that on the claim that he made. And when he did not receive that decision, he could not exercise his due process rights to appeal a decision that was not made. Well, I understood Judge Sholin's question or statement to be more related to a reasons or basis, a more directive order that would direct the board to decide the question that was presented, the issue that was identified in the statement of the case, was this adjudicated?
So the board came back and said, yes, under all the circumstances, as the Secretary's arguing, and given the discussion of the other potential nervous disorders in the 1985 board decision, we find that a decision was made at, let's say, 1985. And they came back and then they looked at it.
Well, then, quite frankly, I think we'd be right back where we are today, because the question would then become whether or not whether the board correctly decided that he had received notice by way of the 1985 decision. And then, quite frankly, that raises the question as to whether or not a veteran in 1985, given the historical fact that a board decision in 1985 was not appealable, what possible good was that notice to him? In 1985, the Judicial Review Act had not been enacted.
He could have filed a motion for reconsideration.
But a motion for reconsideration would not have been an appeal. And
no,
if there had been...
he thought he had another claim pending, and VA was just mistaken as to what he was seeking from them, that would have clarified the matter. VA could have
That's correct, Your Honor. And if we had a non-psychiatrically disabled veteran, then I would think that that would be a reasonable expectation. But we have a severely psychiatrically disabled veteran who's been suffering since he left service, is now recognized by the VA as being totally disabled since 1991. And the question here is one of due process. Did Mr. Cogburn get due process, or did he not get due process? He asked for a decision on his unadjudicated claim. The response was from the VA, we decided that. The board never answered that question.
We said if you don't have procedural compliance, the claim continues on that stream until there is a decision.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I assert that there has never been a decision on the claim made either in 1974 or 1983 for a nervous condition other than post-traumatic stress disorder that was presented in both of those claims.
And that was one decision made, and he filed a notice of disagreement to that, as to the effect.
No. That's what distinguishes the facts of this case. This is not a direct appeal of the effective date. He made a request for an adjudication, and he was denied that, and he filed a notice of disagreement with the VA's refusal to adjudicate his pending claim. And that's what was identified in the statement of the case and was not identified in the issue that was decided by the board in the decision that is on appeal to this case. What they did was to convert it to an effective date claim.
What are you articulating to be that claim that you said he's severely psychiatrically impaired? How is he able to articulate what particular claim he's seeking to have adjudicated?
He laid it out in, I believe, a 3 or 4 page letter to the regional office at Phoenix. They understood it well enough to answer it and explain to him that the claim that he had made in 1974, which they identified from his correspondence was what he was complaining about, had in fact been decided by the board, originally by the VA in 1983 and then by the board in 1985. I see that I'm at the very end of my time. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
The case is submitted. We will read counsel on the bar, and the court will